It is hour two of the midday program, Trey and BK, a Friday edition of the show. Happy Friday to you and yours. No Trey Elling today, taking some time to go play some volleyball.
Nice.
Not nice, but I do believe you'll be able to hear Trey Elling on the afternoon show with Chad Hastings today from 3 till about 6:30 until Texas baseball takes over. And a friendly station programming reminder, it's a doubleheader for Texas Longhorn Baseball. Senior Day at the Dish. The first game starts at 12:45. It's a 12:30 pregame start. It's over on AM 1260. So normal programming on the horn today. This show until 1 o'clock. The broadcast from 1 to 3. Chad and Kevin until 6:30. And that's when the pregame show for the nightcap, the second round of the doubleheader, will take over the airwaves on the horn, and you'll be able to hear that Texas Longhorn baseball game. Hopefully not the final day of the season for the Horns, but starting to look that way after Texas dropped last night's series opener to Oklahoma 4-2 at UFCU Dish Falk Field. Texas, just to reset things for a little bit, the Longhorns need to win both games today, and they need Kansas to sweep Kansas State up in Lawrence this weekend. That series starts tonight and then culminates on Sunday. Both of those things need to happen for Texas to make the Big 12 tournament in Oklahoma City. If Texas loses today, well, that will seal their fate. And if Kansas drops one of those games to K-State, then the Longhorns will be done playing baseball in 2019. So there you go. Quick programming note. Hopefully David Pierce and company can take care of business today. And Rock Chalk, pray for the best. Hope that KU gets the job done up in Lawrence in the Sunflower Showdown. All right, if you're just joining us, we ended our Football at 45 segment talking about the top seven teams that we would love to see the Longhorns play in 2019. Of course, this is all hypothetical. The schedule's already set in stone. We know who Texas is going to play, but we're just having some fun here on a Football Friday. So we gave you teams number 7 and 6 before the break. Number 7, the Georgia Bulldogs. Number 6, the Houston Cougars. Number 5... on this list, according to Andrew Miller of HookemHeadlines.com, the Nebraska Cornhuskers, of course, former Big 12 conference rival Nebraska. Scott Frost has taken over the post up in Lincoln, so it seems like people are excited about things with Nebraska going into the 2019 season. Only 5-7 in year one with Scott Frost at the helm, but excitement is sky high up for Big Red. Adrian Martinez, the dual-threat quarterback for the Huskers, very highly touted, getting a ton of national love going into this season. Matter of fact, he is a better odds Heisman candidate, according to Vegas, than Sam Ellinger going into this year. Adrian Martinez, not anywhere close to a household name, I would guess, for most college football fans. And I would say more of that has to do with Scott Frost and his ability to develop quarterbacks and the type of up-tempo, high-flying offense that Scott Frost runs as the offensive man up in Nebraska. But yeah, Texas-Nebraska, believe it or not, as much bad blood as there is between these two programs, they've only met 14 times in history. Texas has won 10 of those games. But yeah, as much hate and animosity as there seemingly is between Texas and Nebraska, they've only met 14 times in history, but both teams seemingly on their way back. Of course, Texas coming off a 10-4 season. The Longhorns feel that they've got the right coach, and I feel that we've got the right coach here in Austin to bring this program back to glory.
We're back!
Sam Ellinger seems to think so as well, and Nebraska obviously feels the same way with Scott Frost, the lifetime Husker. Not sure that's a phrase they use up there, but of course the NU alumnus running the show up in Lincoln. So that would be a fun matchup. Number 4 on this list, the Washington State Cougars. Get the Pirate, get Mike Leach back into the fold. Of course, Texas and Texas Tech had some incredible matchups when Mike Leach was running the show in Lubbock. He's now doing some pretty incredible things up at Wazoo. And yeah, everybody loves Mike Leach. I say it all the time. You know, I think our show is pretty good, and we get some pretty good ratings, and we appreciate you people for that. But, man, if we could just have 3 hours of a Mike Leach press conference.
And if it happens to be their fat little girlfriends, too bad.
Yeah, from 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, our station's ratings would be through the roof. Advertising sales would be sky high. I mean, everybody would want to listen to that more than they want to listen to Trey and myself. Washington State, that's more for Mike Leach. I mean, we'll see what Wazoo is this year. Obviously, Gardner Minshew, the grad transfer quarterback, is off to the National Football League. So Wazoo probably going to take a step back this year. But I feel like Texas fans, even though Texas Tech was a rival and you didn't really root for Mike Leach while he was in Lubbock, I feel like most college football fans across the country are rooting for Mike Leach to be successful just because he's such a likable guy. He's hilarious. And, man, the offense that he runs, it's fun to watch. There's no denying that. And he's also teaching a class this semester. What is it, like football and the art of war? Something like that at Washington State. So that would be a fun matchup, just the Leach v.
It's
Herman.
Like war tactics or something.
I don't understand. Somehow, some way, it's a legitimate class, though, up at Washington State in Pullman. But yeah, two great offensive minds with Leach and Tom Herman.
I think it's war tactics in the wishbone.
Oh, that sounds like a bad band name right there. Something you can go see at Antone's on a Tuesday night, something like that. All right, number three on the list, seven teams we'd love to see the Longhorns play in 2019. I'm going to disagree with this one. It's the Alabama Crimson Tide. That'd be awesome. Man, I'm excited that Texas has a home-and-home schedule with the Tide in a couple of years. But we're not quite at that level just yet. I mean, if Alabama and Texas met this year, the Crimson Tide will win by a couple of touchdowns. I truly believe that. And I don't want to lose a game. I don't want to lose any games, but I definitely don't want to lose a game by a couple of touchdowns. Texas will see Alabama in 2022 and 2023, so hopefully by that point Texas is in the conversation, if not right there, with Alabama as one of the best teams in college football. But I still think this program is a year or two away from that. And, I don't know if I want to see Nick Saban while he's still coaching the Crimson Tide. Now, if it's a college football playoff, which would have to be the case this year, then sure, sign me up, because that means Texas is going to be in the CFP. I'm all in for that, no question about it. But, you guys know my stance on Alabama. I get criticized. I get called a Crimson Tide fan with how much I pump that program up year after year after year. I do it with good reason. They are really, really good.
Another player.
And, yeah, I mean, they'll lose another 15 starters this year, and then they'll be one of the top two teams in college football once again. So, hey, if Texas plays Alabama this year, I guess that means it's in the college football playoff, and that means the Longhorns will have one loss or fewer going into the new year, which, once again, sign me up for that. No questions asked there. But I'm cool with Alabama not being on the schedule right now in 2019. And number two on the list is the same thing. It's the Clemson Tigers. And I'm sure the writer, our friend Andrew Miller, is saying, we'd love to see Clemson and Alabama this year because that means Texas is going to be in the college football playoff. But, yeah, Clemson's the same conversation as Alabama. They've won two of the last three national titles. Dabo Sweeney has that program running stride for stride with the Crimson Tide right now. Once again, if you see them, that means it's in the playoff. That's a great step for this Texas football team. But ideally, the most ideal situation for Texas is like you make the playoff, but you only have to see one of those teams. Like Alabama and Clemson play in the 1-4 matchup, and then you get somebody else in the 2-3, so you only have to see one of those squads.
Are you riding this new hype train that the Clemson Tigers have surpassed Alabama?
I'm not going to say surpassed, but they're right there.
They are there.
They're right there.
They're knocking on the door.
I mean, I'd still side with Nick Saban just because he's got more skins on the wall.
Nick Saban, yeah.
He's got six national championships to Dabo's two, but, I mean, Clemson killed Alabama the last time we saw these two teams duke it out.
44-16
was the final. I mean, the game was over at halftime. It was an absolute beatdown in favor of Clemson, and Dabo Sweeney is recruiting just about as well as Nick Saban has, and Clemson, like Alabama, it's almost Sharpie. It's almost Seth Davis Sharpie. You can put those two teams in the college football playoff. So they're in a league of their own right now. They're in Tier 1 by themselves.
Would you say Davis Sharpie?
Yeah, the Seth Davis Sharpie. He always tweets that out when it's college basketball time and the NCAA tournament when a team moves on. Number one on this list, seven teams we'd love to see the Longhorns face in 2019. I'm sure you're all saying this out loud in your cars right now. The Texas A&M Aggies. Of course, I think everybody who works for this station is in favor of bringing back the Lone Star Showdown. It's been a while since 2011, of course, the last times these two teams have met on the gridiron, and unfortunately it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. You see story after story of Texas and Texas A&M scheduling future non-conference opponents, but unfortunately, it's never the opposing in-state school.
That feeling's reciprocated too, right? Like, you'd think that they want to have this relationship rekindled.
Yeah. I mean, it's not everybody. It's not 100% of Longhorn
business,
fans.
Though.
It's not 100% of Aggie fans who want this game back. You know, from the Longhorn perspective, there's some fans who are like, you know, they left this conference. Screw them. Who cares about them? And a lot of Aggie fans will say, hey, we're in the better conference. We're in the SEC right now. We already got to play all these great teams. You know, why the hell would we need to play Texas when we play Alabama and LSU every year? Well, screw them. We're better than them. So it's a war of words. I think the best sports rivalry in all of sports, there's a little repetition right there, the best rivalry in all of sports right now is Texas Longhorn Twitter against Texas A&M Aggie Twitter. That's a pretty remarkable rivalry on social media right now. But yeah, look, if Texas and Texas A&M play, it would have to be in the college football playoff. These two teams have had opportunities over the last 8 years to schedule one another in bowl games, and it just hasn't happened. And according to most reports, it feels like Texas is more on board with bringing this game back than Texas A&M is. But it's all lip service at this point. I mean, until it actually happens, who knows what's really going on behind the scenes with all the politics that goes into getting this game back on the field. It seems relatively easy to me. It doesn't seem like it's that difficult to make happen. Just schedule it on Thanksgiving. It's not like there are no rivalries between non-conference teams. You see Florida and Florida State play at the end of every season. You see Georgia and Georgia Tech play at the end of every season. You see Clemson and South Carolina play at the end of every season. So don't give me that, oh, you know, once you start conference play, you don't want to take the dip out or anything like that. It can clearly still be done on Thanksgiving or the final week of the regular season, however you want to handle that. Or an idea that's been suggested, I know the Morning Show guys have talked about it, make it early on in the season. Make it week one. Make it Labor Day weekend. Put it on that Sunday night of Labor Day, so you get a national audience, make it the only game, a standalone Sunday night prime timer during
Hell,
week one.
Hell, what about
one.
Week zero?
Week zero.
Would you be in favor for that? I mean, anything, right?
I don't care. I'm in favor of, I don't care if it's week six. I don't care if you play it in Hawaii, Alaska,
just
Antarctica. Just get it done. These two teams should be playing each other. It's a great rivalry, and I know Texas fans will laugh at that because you know, both teams need to win for it to be a rivalry. But clearly, based off the war of words, based off the fact that we're still talking about this and we haven't played them in 8 years on the football field, shows that it's still a phenomenal rivalry. We need to get that game back in some capacity. But once again, unfortunately, it doesn't look like it's going to happen soon. But yeah, there was a survey, Wags, administered by two students at the University of Texas and two students at Texas A&M University. And at both places, it was like 85%+ of the student body wants that game back. And I think at UT it was like more than 95% of Longhorn
students. Well, half of them hadn't even seen it probably.
Exactly. Yeah, they were like in middle school the last time the Longhorns and Aggies duked it out. So, yeah, good list right there from Andrew Miller. The seven teams we'd love to see the Longhorns play in 2019. If you missed it, Georgia number 7, Houston number 6, Nebraska 5, Washington State 4, Alabama 3, Clemson 2, and Texas A&M number 1. And, of course, since they're not on the schedule in 2019, that would have to be some sort of postseason matchup for Texas to see any of those clubs this season. All right, let's shift back into some NBA basketball. Game 2 last night, Golden State and Portland. The Warriors go up 2-0 with a 114-111 final at Oracle last night. Once again, Portland led by 17 early on. They led by 15 at recess. But Golden State did what Golden State does. Talked about the defense. Phenomenal play at the end by Andre Iguodala, stripping Damian Lillard of the ball. Lillard was going up for a game-winning three, and we know how clutch that dude has been, not only in this postseason, but over the course of his entire NBA career. And Andre Iguodala didn't let him get the shot up. A great defensive play. No foul.
Was that clean? Was that clean?
It was clean. It was clean. Now, could you have called a hand check foul on Andre Iguodala, not on the final strip, but on the initial reach? The initial move from Dame Lillard, could you have called something? Yes, because there was technically contact. Look, I'm on board with getting rid of the hand check foul rule in the NBA. Like, let's bring this thing back to the 80s and 90s where you were allowed to actually put your hand on a guy to defend him. You know, guys are shooting better than ever before, number one, because they're just great shooters. But number two, there's no hand checking. You're not allowed to prevent a guy from getting where he wants to get on the floor. A guy like Steph Curry is a prime example. Now, I don't believe that Steph Curry wouldn't be a successful, incredible player in a previous generation of NBA basketball, but do
Point
I think
never used to get to the cup this much?
Do I think he'd be a two-time MVP? Do I think he'd be you know, on pace to shatter the all-time three-point shooting record if he played in the 80s or 90s. Nah, I don't think that's the case. The game has changed. So, because you can't technically hand check in 2019 the way you could in the past, could there have been a call there? Absolutely. But should there have been? Nah, it was a good no call. It would have been real ticky-tack, and especially in that situation. And I hate saying that because I'm not one of those guys who thinks the game needs to be officiated differently in the final minute. I mean, if it's a foul, it's a foul. If it's not a foul, it's not a foul. But in any situation, I don't want that call called, but especially down the stretch, you can't let a guy get to the line. You got to reward good defense every once in a while in the NBA because it seems like the rules are in place to reward offense only. So every time and when occasionally someone does make a great defensive play like Iggy made, you got to give that guy some credit.
Dude, yeah, not to take anything away from Iggy there, but just I'm still in all on Draymond, man. Everybody's talking about his defense, but my God, can he see into next week? Dude, his vision was immaculate last night, man. He was all over the place, putting it up on a platter for Looney at times and then getting it to Iggy. Man, he's when the Warriors are like this, dude, it's really hard to beat. I don't even care if Kevin Durant, no Kevin Durant, it's going to be tough to dethrone these guys.
Yeah, Draymond Green, often called the heart and soul of the Golden State Warriors. He's been the X Factor all postseason long. He's not the player Kevin Durant is. He's not the player Steph Curry is. He's not the player that Klay Thompson is, but he's almost the straw that stirs the drink for this Golden State Warriors team. And how about this stat line last night from Draymond Green? In 33 minutes, 16 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, and 5 blocks. And you talked about it, Wags. Incredibly clutch. Incredibly clutch in the fourth quarter. A couple of those blocks came down the stretch. You mentioned his phenomenal passing ability, the alley-oop to take the Golden State Warriors from up 1 to up 3 in the final 30 seconds. That was phenomenal. And just, he's such a smart player, and he's a matchup nightmare. I mean, the Hamptons 5 lineup, a ridiculous nickname, but Golden State's sort of death lineup. And they had this before Kevin Durant got there. Obviously, KD is a part of things now, but when the Warriors won their first championship a couple of years ago, it was Steph, it was Klay, it was Iguodala, it was Draymond Green, and it was Sean Livingston. So you'd put Draymond Green at the 5. He was the tallest guy that you had on the floor, and he's such a matchup nightmare because on defense, Draymond Green can guard a big. He's bulky, he's strong enough to go pound for pound with any big body down low. And then on offense, I mean, Draymond Green runs all over the floor. He can shoot the three, not as well as he did early in his career. And, you know, you don't see teams respecting that too much. But if you leave him wide open, he's going to pull it and he's going to knock it down every once in a while.
His engine too, man. He just keeps going.
But his engine, I mean, he's just so much quicker, so much faster than any other big man on the court. And last night, I criticized Terry Stotts a lot. I don't yell too much at the television unless I'm watching my favorite teams play, but I'm sitting at home yelling at Terry Stotts. What are you doing having Myers Leonard on the floor? And that's such a bad matchup for Golden State, Draymond Green v. Myers Leonard. And Draymond's just such a smart player. Just a basic pick-and-roll offense that Steve Kerr was calling. Draymond and Steph Curry, they were running everything through that. You saw Steph hit a big three because of it. You saw that alley-oop from Dre to Kevon Looney because of that. Draymond's just such a smart player. That's something that doesn't show up on the box score, but he was incredible last night and really has been great all series long. I talked about it during the Houston series. He was kind of the X factor. It was him and Iguodala that made things go for Golden State until Steph Curry did what he did in the fourth quarter of Game 5 and obviously into Game 6. But both of those guys deserve a ton of credit. So, look, Golden State's up 2 games to love. This series shifts to Portland. You know, the old cliche, the old adage that a series doesn't start until a team wins a game on the road. We almost saw that last night for Portland. But, man, it feels like the Blazers let a big-time opportunity slip away. I'm still going with Golden State in 5. Wags mentioned it earlier. He thinks the Warriors are going to sweep this series, which means on Monday night this thing could come to an end and Golden State could be clinching a spot in their 5th straight NBA Finals. 5th straight NBA Finals. And it feels like Kevin Durant's not coming back in this series. We know for a fact that he won't be a part of things in Games 3 and 4. He's not even making the trip to the Moda Center for these next couple of games in this series. But I don't think Golden State's ever going to be in a position in these Western Conference Finals where they're going to need Kevin Durant back. The only scenario in which KD comes back in this series is if Portland wins the next 3 games. I'm not even going to say the next 2, because I don't know if Kevin Durant, you heard it from Matt Steinmetz last hour, the Warriors said yesterday they're going to reevaluate Kevin Durant next week. Well, Game 5 is scheduled to be Wednesday. Next week from yesterday would be next Thursday. So I don't know if Kevin Durant's going to be back for Game 5, regardless of the situation. I think the only scenario in which KD plays in this WCF is if Portland somehow, some way wins the next three. It's not going to happen. I don't even think Portland fans
they
have a chance. They don't need him. Now, do I think they need some semblance of Kevin Durant on the floor to beat Milwaukee? Probably. You'd be silly to count out Golden State with all the experience that they have and all the talent that they have. I mean, you'd be dumb to think that they can't
beat
Milwaukee
Lopez,
without him.
When you got Brooke Lopez firing off from behind the arc at a clip that he's doing, man, you need everybody, I guess, right?
No, I mean, look, the Bucks are a hell of a team. They won 65 games this year. They cruised through the first two rounds of the playoffs. I think they're going to beat Toronto in five, maybe six games. I think I said six before this series started. They're awesome. They're awesome. And the stat that I always go to, I think there's been seven teams before Milwaukee this year. There's been seven teams in the history of the NBA that have won 45 or more regular season games by double figures. Milwaukee did it this year. They were the eighth. The previous seven teams to accomplish that feat all went on to win the NBA championship. So say what you will, a random historical stat, a historical trend on Milwaukee's side. But most of those seven teams didn't have to go up against Golden State and the dynasty that is.
That's the one outlier.
The Golden State Warriors. That is an outlier, the one outlier, and a huge outlier. Real quick, let's hear from Steve Kerr before we take a break. The coach of the Golden State Warriors last night was asked about Kevin Durant and his injury status. We'll let you hear right now from the coach.
You know, hopefully he continues to progress, and he has made progress, but, you know, it's a little more serious than we thought at the very beginning, and so we'll see where it all goes.
Yeah, the initial thought and the initial diagnosis with the KD injury was a mild calf strain, and that came on May 8th. Game 5 against Houston was May 8th. Today is May 17th. Don't check your calendar.
Non-contact,
I got
right?
you. Non-contact injury. And the original thing the Warriors said was KD will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. So 2 weeks would be the 22nd. So it shouldn't be a surprise that KD is not making the trip to Portland to play in games 3 and 4 in this series. But I'll give Trey some credit, and it's not only Trey who said this. A lot of folks are thinking that the Warriors are really downplaying this Durant injury. Like it might be a torn Achilles or a more serious calf strain than the Warriors are leading on, and they just don't want to give anything to other teams or any sort of ammunition. They always want to have Kevin Durant, the potential of Kevin Durant coming back in the minds of own players, but also fans and other teams around the league.
Now, see, I thought they were playing it close to the vest, but I thought it was the opposite end. I thought he wasn't that hurt, and maybe they were trying to have the Bucks not prepare for him.
Maybe
they were trying to have the Bucks prepare for just the original Splash Brothers, and then you throw out Kevin Durant, and you're playing.
Yeah, exactly. That's a nice thing to have waiting in the wing.
I was
going
to say something else, my bad.
It's a nice thing to have waiting in the wing, right?
Kevin
KD,
Durant,
one of the best players in the history of the NBA.
KD, go ahead and take it. We don't need the win without you. We got this, man. Yeah, that's...
They've done it before. They've won a championship. They won 73 games in a regular season. But yeah, the ultimate security blanket, lifetime Longhorn Kevin Durant. All right, so game three of that series tomorrow night in Portland. We'll see if the Blazers can make things a little bit interesting, or we'll see if Golden State can send Portland to the brink of elimination. Toronto at Milwaukee tonight on TNT. That series, of course, one love in favor of the Bucks. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll head up I-35. We'll go to the Metroplex and check in with Jory Epstein, who covers the Dallas Cowboys for USA Today. We'll talk to Jory about the Cowboys draft, but more importantly, Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott, Amari Cooper, Byron Jones. What's the plan for the Dallas Cowboys, and how are extension talks going with four of the key pieces to America's team? That's coming up next. Trey and BK on the Horn. Welcome back to the Midday Program, Trey and BK. No Trey today, taking some time to go play some volleyball at the AVP event going on in Craig Fields right now. Wag shaking his head in there, and rightfully so. But I'm holding down the fort today until 1 o'clock. Appreciate y'all joining me today. I've got to, in a minute, I'm going to have to eat some crow on my Jordan Spieth take because he is having a great second round at the PGA Championship. But right now, let's head to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline and welcome Jory Epstein to the program. She is a lifetime Longhorn who covers the Dallas Cowboys and the NFL for USA Today. She's also been a great friend of mine since way back in high school. Say a prayer for her for that. And she's nice enough to join us now. Jory, Shabbat Shalom. Thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
Thanks for having me on, Brad. Great to join y'all. I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you as well. And let's jump right into things, Jory. Let's get your thoughts on the Dallas Cowboys draft before we talk about some contract issues. Obviously, a very controversial topic with the Cowboys this year. A lot of folks wanted the boys to draft a safety. They ended up taking Tristan Hill in the second round. Didn't address that safety need until the sixth round with Donovan Wilson out of Texas A&M. Just your overall thoughts on the way Jerry Stephen and company completed the 2019 NFL draft.
The Cowboys didn't have a flashy draft this year, but I think when you look at their draft success the last several seasons, it's hard to really question them until you see these players get on the field. So certainly they know it. They've said it. They have invested fewer resources in that safety position than any other position on the roster and then most other teams around the league invest in their safeties. And I think that shows when you look at how few turnovers they get. That being said, they focus their defense on if we can have this really strong defensive line and make that pass rush so intense it helps out our secondary, that's what we're going to do. So I don't think that they upgraded the safety to the point where they have one of the best safety groups by any means. That being said, I think they know what they're doing. I think that they boosted depth in a lot of different positions on the roster. And Stephen Jones did say last week that they've been getting calls about trades for a safety, so you never know what could happen before the season starts in September.
Do you think that's the biggest question mark with the Cowboys going into 2019? Is it that safety position?
You know, I think it's almost the opposite of a question mark because I think it's the exact same that it was last year. So I don't know that there's a question so much as you know what you're getting, and what you're getting isn't terrible play, but it's not the strongest. And so I think it's a question of whether they want to get better, but I don't know that they care. And Stephen Jones has said, look, we found sixth rounders like Xavier Woods. We found undrafted free agents like Jeff Heath, and we think that's good enough. And we're not as concerned about bolstering that position. So I don't think they did a lot to improve it, but I don't think they view it as a question mark. I think they're just content with realizing not every position on the roster can necessarily be strong, so we'll let safety be less strong.
That's crazy to me. All right, Jory, what about some contract conversations? Of course, the Cowboys got things done with DeMarcus Lawrence earlier this offseason. The biggest question is Dak Prescott, who, of course, is entering the final year of his rookie contract with Dallas. I mean, any quarterback for the Cowboys is going to be polarizing, but Dak Prescott, maybe at the top of the list of most polarizing QBs in this franchise's history. What's your stance on Dak, number one? Do you think the Cowboys should work a deal out with Dak, and how are negotiations going? Do you think there's a good chance a deal gets done before the start of this season?
I do think they'll get a deal done before the start of the season, whether that comes in 2 weeks or 2 months, I'm not sure. We talked to Dak about it on Wednesday at the team's annual home run derby fundraiser, and he's like, look, I don't have anxiety. I don't have worry. I want to be a Cowboy for the rest of my life, and the people doing the deal feel the same way, so I think it's going to happen. I think when you look at it, is Dak the most talented naturally quarterback in the league? No, I don't think so. I don't think he thinks that. Does he have the intangibles and work ethic? Yes. And does he have a good record and decent stats? I think he does. I mean, he's led the team to an NFC East title two of his three seasons. He hasn't put up a losing season. All of this while on a rookie contract out of the fourth round when he magically got elevated up the depth chart when Tony Romo got hurt, Kellen Moore got hurt, and now those guys are broadcasting an offensive coordinator. So I think another thing to keep in mind, as one of the Dallas Morning News columnists here likes to say, is you can say you don't want your quarterback, but until you have a replacement, think twice about what you're saying. So I don't think that not signing Dak to an extension is going to get you where you need to be at the position. I think in an ideal world, you get him to take a deal where it doesn't keep you from having the rest of the offense be strong and have those resources invested in it.
No doubt. And Dak, obviously, priority number one for this franchise moving forward. But there's three other guys who are free agents either after this year or next year, and that's Zeke Elliott, Amari Cooper, and Byron Jones, all really instrumental pieces to this team. If you had to rank them one through three, Jory, on deals that you think are most likely to get done this offseason, and hey, you could say none if you think none of them are going to happen, how would you sort of rank Zeke, Amari, and Byron in terms of which deals can get done by this front office?
I don't think Amari and Byron will get done this offseason. I think Zeke is a maybe, and I think all of their reasons are different. So Zeke, the Cowboys picked up his fifth-year option for 2020. It's about $9 million. They've got him under contract for two more years. The question is, will he hold out, and what does he want? He says he's fine and not concerned. What becomes interesting with guys like Zeke and Amari is it's almost this back and forth of, if you're Zeke, do you want to get this locked down so you have this guarantee because you're getting hit so much and putting so much into it? But I've also seen people say that for Amari, and it applies to both of them, it's all about resetting the market. So the Cowboys have said with Zeke, we're going to look at this Todd Gurley deal. I believe it was 4 years, $60 million, 45 guaranteed. and say that's the type of market that we're set in. And every time someone does a new deal, the market gets reset. So although the Cowboys don't want to pay everyone too early, they almost have incentive to get these deals done so they don't have to pay after someone else has reset the market. For Amari, he's got incentive to say, wait, let another receiver get paid, and then I'll come back and get more because he's created that value. I think with Byron Jones, they are going to wait, but they do want to sign these guys. It's just a question of, as Stephen Jones says, we're giving the money, but how are we giving it and to whom?
Jory Epstein, who covers the Cowboys for USA Today, nice enough to join us now. She's an absolute rising star in this industry. Follow her on Twitter at Jory Epstein. Jory, I saw you tweet out a couple of days ago at a Dallas Cowboys charity event. Jason Witten was walking up to reporters introducing himself as a rookie tight end. It's going to feel that way a little bit. Of course, he wasn't a part of things a year ago. Do you expect Jason Witten to have any sort of legitimate contribution for this team in 2019?
Right, we definitely have the rookie tight end jokes, and I'm not yet sick of them. I still think they're funny. Also, from my understanding, when Jason Witten went back into the weight room to start their off-season program, they gave him one of their rookie weightlifting sheets to completely start his numbers anew because he had been away for 9 months. I think he'll be able to contribute. I think there are two aspects. One, from all outside appearances, which are not everything, he looks like he's in great shape, and he hasn't been away from the game that long. Plus, he's not coming back in August 15th saying in 2 weeks I'm going to play. He'll have 6 months to ready himself for the season, and he knows what he's been doing for 15 years. He knows how to ready himself. I also think when you look at a guy like Tom Brady, obviously he's very gifted, but one of the reasons Tom Brady's still performing at that level is because the mental awareness of what he has of the game and what he needs to do is so high, and I think Witten brings that. So I think he'll have fewer snaps than he once did, which is pretty easy to do considering he never came off the field in the peak of his career. But I think that as they try and get other people time, I think that both off the field in terms of what he does for the locker room and tight end film study and also on the field, he will be able to be productive. And if he can at least do a little bit at the beginning of the season, just having him threatening underneath will open up a lot for guys like Amari and Zeke.
Absolutely. And Jory, before we let you go, I mentioned you also cover the NFL for USA Today, and you're a lifetime Longhorn. You wrote a great story a couple of weeks ago about Gary Johnson and all that he's gone through over the course of his life to make it to the National Football League. I'm going to retweet this story. I want to encourage everybody to read it. But for a minute, if you will, just kind of plug this story and talk a little bit about Gary Johnson's journey from UT to the NFL.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, that was one of my favorite stories I've worked on. Here I am, like, I'd been at the NFL Combine in February, and then I came home for the last couple of days. I'm watching the broadcast, and I hear them mention that Gary Johnson had been in foster and group homes, has a great story, and looking forward to see what he can do. And then the broadcast mentioned nothing else. Gary runs his really fast 40 time that helped get him on teams' boards. And I'm like Googling him, and I can't find anything about this story, which is exciting for a reporter when something hasn't already been written 100 times. So essentially, Gary's mom had him at 14 years old. By age 4, he was in the foster care system because she had a drug addiction. And then he had all sorts of twists and turns you can read about in this story. But just the number of setbacks that he shouldn't be on an NFL team, even if it's a 90-man roster right now, I understand, really amazed me. And the candidness he spoke about with. And also just, I mean, the strength it takes for someone like him to overcome as many things as he did. And by no means is he saying he's a perfect human and has made no mistakes. He butts heads with plenty of people and did with Todd Orlando, among others, at Texas. But I think that I couldn't get over, we're walking from Texas Pro Day back to the football facilities just across campus as I'm interviewing him. And he couldn't go a minute without someone rolling down a car window or otherwise to say, hi, oh, do you need anything? Where are you going? I mean, he just seemed like the Pied Piper of campus. And I was really inspired by how he overcame things to both succeed on and off the field. He's now got 2 kids under 5 months old who he wants to support for. So he didn't end up getting drafted. He signed with the Chiefs as an undrafted free agent, which is a 3-year deal. I'm really pulling for him. I was actually kind of disappointed when they traded for a linebacker this week. So I'm like, stop putting people ahead of Gary on the depth chart. But I'm hoping that because he has special teams experience and skill, that he'll at least be able to make his way onto a roster through special teams as he continues to develop, and hopefully his size will not be something to keep him back. So we'll see, but he's in Kansas City right now going through their offseason program, and I look forward to seeing where he goes.
No doubt. It's great stuff, and it's a great story from USA Today Sports. All right, follow her on Twitter, at Jory Epstein, and we'll definitely check in at some point down the road, Jory, but thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate you joining us for a couple minutes today.
Thanks, Brad. Look forward to being back on. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Sounds good. There she goes, Jory Epstein, covering the Cowboys and the NFL for USA Today. And I'm thankful for Jory. She knows a lot about me. She's known me since high school. She threatened to, you know, bring some stuff up, make some jokes about old BK, and she was nice enough to not do that. So I appreciate her for that. But all right, good stuff. No. Ridiculous. Not that. She's a great follow on Twitter, though, for you Dallas Cowboys and Texas Longhorn fans, lifetime Longhorn as well. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, would you look at the time? 11:45. Would you look at the day? It's Friday. It's time to schvitz. Even though Trey's not here, and that might make it better, you can make fun of Trey, and he won't have any way to respond. 447-3776. It's the midday version of the Blitz. We only do it once a week. We'll also get to where are we at in society as well. People like to prove themselves in this world. How far are your doctors going to prove that they really are good doctors? Scary story. We'll tell you next. Trey and BK on the horn.
It's a shanda and a hopper. Fair dust the leg and it's able to dip by the cup and thread. Baruch atah Adonai.
The Schvitz.
All right, welcome back to the midday program. Schvitz time, 447-3776, your time to shine on a Friday. It's brought to you by Audio Visual Consultations, avconsultations.com, the website, 255-8678, the phone number to call when you want the home TV surround sound setup of your dreams. Go to the website, avconsultations.com, look at the gallery of projects they've done over the last three decades plus here in Central Texas, and make the call today. Get the home of your dreams with Audio Visual Consultations. All right, we've got a few of you on the line, so let's fire it up. First, Schvitzer, you're up.
I want to congratulate my son, James, for graduating AIT. Good luck on your next journey, son. I'm very proud of you, and I love you.
Yes, thank you for that. Congrats to James and to all of you students of all ages who are finishing up whatever level of school you are at. Congrats to you and your families. Next, Schvitzer, you're up.
Yeah, I just want to congratulate my sister on graduating from Texas State last night.
Very nice. A sister love, not just children. You got siblings too. All right, next Schvitzer, you're up.
What's up, bro? It's me, Seth Ellinger. Come and scope me out here at Craig Field. I'll be the rad bro ham slapping serves and guarding nets. Rises, bro!
Sand Ellinger, a.k.a. Trey Elling, apparently calling into the Schvitz. Well done, sir. Next Schvitzer, you're up.
Hey, just want to stop in and say happy Friday to you, BK, my Hebrew brother. Shalom, and have a good one, dude.
You too. You too. Many thanks. Happy Friday to all of you out there. Enjoy the weekend. Hopefully it won't rain, but tomorrow not looking good. Next, Schvitzer, you're up.
Hey, where is Trey? Is he hanging with his boys over at Serta, going over his hues and sheens?
Yeah, I think he's at Bull Creek today, actually, playing volleyball or somewhere on 4th Street. No, he's at the AVP event on Craig Fields on the east side. Apparently, that's what he's telling me. I don't know. Next, Schvitzer, you're up.
Thank God it's Friday. Time to get some nanny fanny.
Well, the governor's got some weird weekend plans, huh? I'd be running into him on 6th Street this weekend, I'll tell you what. Oh, you guys are loading it up today. I love it. Next, Schvitzer, you're up.
This is Roberto Kraft. In honor of Grumpy Cat, I've decided to set up a 1-800-BOBCAT line. That's with the K and two T's. So if any of you Bobcats need nourishing or Grumpy Cats need comforting, call me.
All right, Roberto Kraft. Two more Schvitzers. Next Schvitzer, you're up.
I know I'm a little late to the party, but I saw that Eli Manning transgender picture. He looks just like Rachel Maddow. That is hilarious.
Oh, the Snapchat filter. I haven't seen the Eli Manning one. I assume it's the Snapchat filter. Is there any transgender Eli Manning
news?
It
probably looks dumb.
Apparently, this show is not your breaking source for transgender news, so I apologize for that. All right, final Schvitzer on a Friday. You're up.
I got to tell you guys, the interview you did yesterday with the actor from Something About Mary was pretty damn good. Great job, guys. That was awesome.
Oh, man. Thank you. I'm not sure if he's talking about 2 days ago or he just assumes when we have a woman on the show that she's from a movie. But, yesterday, thank you, Sal. Appreciate the love right there. All right, good schvitz from you people. Appreciate that. We had to move some things around, so what's normally at 10:30, now at 11:54 on a Friday. It's time for...
Where are we at in society today?
This segment brought to you by Student Loan Payment Lawn Care. Call or text Jake today for a free estimate, 512-653-0687. First-time clients receive 25% off. Visit slplawncare.com for more details.
Yes, I've got Jake on the schedule coming to my place at some point over the next couple of days. You should do the same, man. This warm weather, the sun is finally out. Of course, the combination of the sun and the rain means grass is going to grow. How about that for science? I learned something in school. Good job, Teach. Well done. Hit them up, Jake, SLP Lawn Care. They do phenomenal work. All right, today's Where Are We At in Society story comes from France, a country I'm not too fond of. They did give us the French fry, which I do appreciate that, but I think that's their only successful contribution to the world.
Flavor Town!
They have lost some wars, so that's cool. Anesthesiologist. That's how you pronounce that, right, Wags? You're smarter than me.
Yeah, they put... that drug stuff into your back.
Yeah. That's a real job. An interesting one at that. Our friend Frederick Piker has been questioned over the weekend, and he is being accused of poisoning more than 50 patients during his career as an anesthesiologist. Not only that, this doctor, Dr. Piker, has killed two patients by deliberately poisoning them so he could revive them in a bid to show off his skills to colleagues. That is according to this charge.
That's malpractice.
Yeah, a little bit of malpractice right there. So this guy, according to charges, he hasn't been, nothing's official yet. It's all allegations at this point. He is just trying to prove that he's a good doctor to family and colleagues and friends. He is poisoning people to revive them, to make himself look good. So he's trying to act like the hero. Like, oh, this guy would have died if it wasn't
mom,
for me.
Hey, mom, look what I can do. Like yeah. Is that what you're saying?
But it's actually, they wouldn't be dying if it weren't for him. So this doctor is actually a father of three. He's already been charged in the past with the poisoning of seven patients who went into cardiac arrests from the years 2008 to 2017. But this is an additional allegation to the original charge. Two of the patients have passed away while others were revived, but investigators later found traces of potassium in their bloodstreams that was five times the legal dose. Five times the legal dose of potassium.
He doesn't have his license, right?
So that's what he has been using to poison his victims / patients, and he's been trying to revive them before they passed away. Well, two of them have actually died. He denies the accusations, of course, says, quote, I have been accused of odious crimes that I didn't commit, which was what Dr. Piker said after he was charged. But yeah, that's our story right there. And this is a guy who's considered a brilliant anesthesiologist, one of the best in the business, one of the best in France. And he has denied the allegations repeatedly. Also some worries about financial situations that's perhaps leading to this decision for Dr. Piker.
Like black market stuff?
I guess so, man. I guess so.
But he can't, like, I'm sorry, I missed this. He can no longer practice, correct?
Not as of now.
Wow.
So normally, this guy is not in charge of sedating the patients. That's the normal practice for anesthesiologists, or at least in France, for this guy. But his quick thinking to revive all of these patients has people very suspicious. So maybe he's not the actual guy administering the extra dosage of potassium, but people are skeptical because of how quickly he's reviving them and how he knows exactly how to revive most of these patients. People are skeptical that he at least knows about it.
Oh, it's premeditated.
Yeah, this is premeditated in some form or fashion, that this guy knows what he's doing, poisoning patients and then trying to revive him to make himself look good. So we will definitely follow this lawsuit without question, but be careful out there, man. I mean, doctors, I haven't had a bad doctor. I've loved every doctor I've worked with. They're supposed to be trustworthy, but not all of them are.
Who knows what he's doing to them when they're under? God, that's
a scary thought.
I'm not trying to be morbid or dark, man, but my God.
With great power comes great responsibility. And when you're an anesthesiologist, you are in control of someone's body and the drugs that goes into someone's body, and with the type of power that those drugs have, great responsibility should be had and has not been had by Dr. Frederick Piker.
Anesthesiologists don't knock you out. They just take the pain away. Is that right?
According to this, he's not in charge of the sedation of the patients. I'm no expert on that. But there you go. There's your Where We At in Society story today. Don't go to doctors in France, or at least not to Dr. Frederick Piker. All right, we will take a break. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. We'll get back into some sports conversation. Plus, Wags will lead us through Tinder time. It's Friday. Trey and BK on the horn.